Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and Apco Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Manager with EasyCare. Please welcome my guest today, Roger. Roger, welcome to Forward.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Roger, tell our audience a little bit about you, your title, and the company you work for, and what got you into the business?
Sure. My title is Fixed Operations Director for an auto group out here in Elgin called Biggers, the Biggers Auto Group. We have a Chevy store and a Mazda store that I oversee. I've been in the business since 2000. While I was in high school, I was studying to be a technician, and then went to UTI, finished up there, and been working in fixed ops my whole career in the Chicagoland area, believe it or not, the whole time.
Wow. So you were going to be a technician.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did it for a while. I did it for about 6-7 years and I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to move up in the business, and, the technician part, I kind of grew out of. So I went on to be a service advisor for a while, and eventually a service manager, and then moved all the way up to the position I'm at now.
What a great story, Roger. Thanks for sharing that. This episode's titled Leadership in Fixed Ops, Building High-Performing Teams in the Service Department for 2025. Roger, tell us a little bit about what effective leadership looks like in service departments, and how do you see it evolving in 2025?
I see it really just as a two-pronged attack there, because it's consistency and communication. That's really where my leadership is really focused on. Communication as far as how everybody communicates with each other, how we communicate with the customers, and how the customers communicate back with us, and then consistently following all those processes.
So what's one thing that you've learned in what you just said to make sure that that happens? Because we can talk about it all day long, right? But how do we make it happen?
Well, we make it happen with training. Right. We hold them accountable because we set an expectation as a group. Our service advisors are expected to set a time on when they're going to contact the customer, whether it's no news, some news, it's in progress, whatever it might be. There's a time that every customer is designated when they get written up, when they're going to get contacted, if they're not here waiting. Right. So with that, the advisor also documents that on the RO. So that allows me to be able to jump into a repair order and see, okay, advisor A said they were going to call you around 1, right? It's 12 o'clock, so you're calling us, I can see where we are in that process.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting way to say that too. And there's all kinds of technology and tools that help keep that gap shortened, right? So the customer does know what's going on. The technicians need to know what's going on, parts department, so forth and so on. How do you see that really evolving for 2025?
I think it's going to take a huge step because technology is what our business is. The cars are always changing. We have to change with them and the customers. Essentially, our multi-point system has turned into our dispatching program and our communication, right? It has a chat box in it that we all jump in and put in our notes. If I talk to a customer, I jump in that chat box and put in there, I talk to her, this customer, let them know we're still waiting on the part. We're expecting a call back to the customer at 10 a.m. tomorrow, right? And it's all on the repair order. So no matter who jumps in it, whether it's the parts person, the technician, the service advisor, or myself, or a manager, we're all sharing that chat box and seeing exactly the lifeline of the vehicle.
Oh, I love that. So you've been in the business for a minute like myself. We had managers that weren't really effective leaders, right? They were more bosses, right? Now we've evolved to the point where leadership in the role that you're in is more than just being a boss, right? Talk to us a little bit about your effective leadership style.
Well, my effective leadership style is being involved. Something I go by is big things get smaller the more involved you are. Mm. Right. So me being in two stores, everybody's like, how do you do it? How do you keep up with everything? It's just me being involved, checking in with the advisors, checking in with the technicians, checking in with the parts department, and even the porters, right? It gives me a heads up on things that are coming up, You know, perfect example is I have a service advisor whose son has a recital on Friday, right? So I know that's coming. So I'll know, hey, make sure the service other service advisors take lunch before she leaves. Make sure that her customers are called before she cuts out, you know, and it's all preemptive because I talked to the service advisor in a conversation, right? This wasn't they sent me an email or anything like that. It's because I'm out there in the service drive and being involved with what everyone has going on outside of work. And to your point, it's more than just being a boss. It's being the leader.
I love that. That's great. I remember trying to take a day off to go see something my kid was doing. And my boss would say yes. And then when the time came, he's like, you really can't go, or we're way too busy. Right. And so I would miss it. It sounds like the way you're doing it and how you're treating it is that it's not that it might happen. It's going to happen. Right.
That is correct. And that's the culture from the dealer principle down. You know, I mean, you let him know, I could let him know, hey, I'm not going to be here for this. He's asking me why I'm still here, why I haven't gone to what I told him I was going to get to. Right. And this dude, he's running three dealerships. You know, he has a lot on his plate as well. And to be involved like that with his people is the same culture I need to follow with mine. And I do, you know, I make sure that from our service managers to our porters, you know, I help them cover each other.
I love that. What are the top three qualities you believe every fixed ops leader needs to have in order to build a high performing team?
To build a high performing team, you have to have a good onboarding process, right? When you bring somebody in, it's your first impression with them. It's your first, first time you get to introduce everybody. The process has to be set. You can't be fumbling around while you're trying to get them all set up and get them going, you know, because it's only going to make your department, your store look like the whole place is fumbling and the whole place is going through a lot of change. You know, so that way I would say, you know, for a fixed ops manager, that's going to be key. The second is going to be, you know, a good communication process, right? What is the process for? A, if you're not here, B, you're going on lunch, C, the technician's not here, right? So everybody knows what we should have done in those situations. That way, if everybody follows the same process, everybody can follow where we need to jump in to help out, right? A technician's off, you know, okay, what can we do to make sure we're updated on that? Well, that's up to the advisor, right? We put in the chat box, technician's not going to be here on Thursday, right? Then the advisor can check in Wednesday night, Wednesday afternoon, where we're at on the vehicle so they can update the customer. Or if the customer calls, right? So anybody can go into that same repair order and see, okay, customer's off on Thursday, the part's been ordered, and we should have it here Friday. All the notes are there. So it really gives the customer the reassurance that they're not forgotten just because no one's calling them.
Right. And some cases, that's the biggest purchase that customer's ever going to make. Right?
Absolutely. In many cases, that is the biggest purchase.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people only have one car, so it's a very important purchase.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. How do you identify and develop the next generation of leaders within your service department? Because a guy that you and I know very well, Eric Houdagy, always says you need to look at training your replacement. Right. So how do you do that?
And I completely agree with that. Right. And you do that by making training a focus of the group, of the store, right? Making training part of the culture. And when I say that, I mean, I have tech porters that are going to school to be mechanics. Right. I let them bring their tools here, their toolboxes and stuff like that. And then as they're working for us as porters, we schedule them one day a week to shadow someone in the lube rack, right? Doing oil changes, PDIs, the minor stuff. But one day a week, these guys are in that rack learning how that's done, right? Now, why do we do that is because, hey, things happen, right? We got family obligations. We're not feeling well. We don't come in. Now I have somebody that can jump in for the day and help out on the lube rack, right? And now it's a plug and play. They already have their tools here. They already know our process. And then, you know, they already have a login. So they just jump right into that situation. And we do that across the board, right? We also train porters to greet customers to help the service advisors, right? We're short a service advisor. Now the porters are gathering the information on the vehicle. They're grabbing the VIN, the mileage. We use the advisors. So they're scanning the vehicle for the advisors that are there and then put the tag in the window and walk the customer directly to the service advisor that's going to be available. So now, you know, it just creates a seamless process.
Oh, I love that. So it's almost like you're making a minor league team, right? And the background.
Yes.
So you have the biggers major league team, and then you have the minor leagues, right? I love that.
Yeah. And it's across the board like that. Apprentices now are also helping the journeymen. You know, when we're short of journeymen, they're cross-trained to do journeyman work because they're already working with them day in and day out, right? Service advisors, I train them, if I'm not here, what the process would be to do something, how to handle a customer in a specific situation, what I would do in these situations, right? So they're all being trained. You know, I have three guys that could be service managers right now, right, if they wanted to. But, you know, we have such a culture here that they're here writing service for us. And, you know, we all have a good time because everyone's in the loop. Everyone knows what the process is.
I love the passion that you're talking about this, because this is exactly why I wanted to talk to you, because I knew you were the guy, right? I've been following your journey for a long time and love getting to know you. And this is so perfect, tailor-made just for you. The fixed ops often is faced with high turnover rates, right? What strategies have you found most successful in retaining talent like you have and keeping the team motivated and involved?
Well, it's a clear career path, right? So when we hire somebody, let's just give an example as a technician, right? They, from day one, they see how they're going to get to our pay scale, right? Wherever they want to be on that pay scale, right? They know how they're going to get there, how long it's going to take from day one, you know? So they're aware of that. So now there's no, hey, when are you going to make me an apprentice? Hey, when am I going to move out of the lube rack? When, you know, it's all set from the first day they get here. So now that creates an environment where they're like, okay, I'm only going to be here a year or 2 years in this position. I got to make sure, hey, I'm on time. I got to make sure I'm doing all my training. I got to make sure I'm cleaning up my racks, because otherwise I'm not going to move up to the next step because I'm not doing my part as a tech.
Wow. Right?
And that's also, you know, for porters, you know, everyone who wants to be in the business, right? I do a lot of, you know, I'm very involved with the community colleges and the technical schools. And, you know, it's also caused a weird problem for me, because now I get more people than I can hire that want to join our store. You know, so what I do is someone that's really green, right? I met somebody who was at our community college nearby. They want to be a technician with us, but they've only been in school for 3 weeks. They haven't bought any tools yet. You know, I the guy was so happy. The kid came and said, the store is awesome. He wants to join us. You know, he's real excited. And, you know, so what I did is I moved him into the porter spot. I'm like, look, jump, work with us as a porter. Meet the technicians. We'll put you on this process where you work in the year as a porter, give you time to buy tools, do more training, learn how we do things. I'll move you into the shop. And he actually has an opportunity to talk to other people at our store now that have done this process. So it's not some make-believe thing that I'm just, you know, selling these, you know, random dreams. It's like they can actually talk to people. Hey, you do this, you get this. There's no way around it. You know, so it's been really working well. And it's across the board at our Mazda store and our Chevy store, you know, and the service managers are on board with it. We all understand that training is a part of our everyday.
Wow. Okay. So that's a great tip to take with you if you're listening to this. How do you balance holding service advisors accountable while also fostering a positive and supportive work culture?
It's the approach, you know, the approach. Holding someone accountable, if you treat it as a consequence, it's going to be resisted. It's going to be challenged, you know, but when you have accountability across the board for the same accountability for everybody in their individual positions, right? And everybody knows what the steps are, you know, point A to point B. Accountability kind of works in itself. Everybody understands, okay, you didn't do this step, so now I had to help you with this step. Let's make sure we work on this first step before we get to here, right? And that just all of a sudden it creates self-accountability, because now if I have to come and ask a question, they know where they missed the step. I know where they missed the step. And it's not this big surprise, like, I don't know what happened. I don't know how this could have happened, because, you know, this big surprise. It's everybody knows what the steps are, how we do things, you know, and that's from the general manager or the vice president down. You know, he was a fixed ops guy for 25 years. So we explained to him something that happened with a customer. No matter who he talks to, the process is the same. So we can all find where the gaps are. So now it creates accountability internally in our advisors, our technicians, because everybody knows what the steps are. This happened. It only could have happened if we missed this step or this step.
Okay.
So
do you have every step written down when it comes to their job?
Not every step, but like the lube rack, we have every step for what we expect on a basic maintenance and oil change and a rotate, what mm-hmm. we want them to inspect, what we want them to put in a video multi-point, you know, where the tire pressure should be set to. Everything that we can set in those are set. Everyone else has expectations for their positions. Advisors have everything written as far as what we expect on a phone call, on an appointment, on a closing out a ticket, discounts, and things like that. They have a pretty set roadmap that everybody follows.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, we're in a high stress environment in that fixed ops department. What role does emotional intelligence play in leadership for you? And how do you develop it?
Huge role, Corey. I mean, I would say that's a third of my day is managing that part of everybody's day, right? You know, the emotional intelligence comes big on my part because, you know, there's another expression I like to go by is, if I have a cold, my department has pneumonia, right? So I have to be careful in how I react and how I do things, my mannerisms, because people will be like, oh man, why is he mad? I must have done something wrong. You know, so I have to be careful how I'm responding, how I am helping, and how I'm walking just through the shop, right? Because if I'm upset, it just increases everyone else's stress levels. You know, especially if I involve myself the way I do, you know, they want to help, they want to be involved, and they want to make sure they don't add to that aggravation. So I have to be careful on how I react. So emotional intelligence is big internally, and when I'm dealing with my employees and my coworkers, you know, I have to approach things as a question, right? Not questioning their ability, but questioning like, how are you holding up, right? And how they start is how you take that direction. Oh, I'm doing great. Okay, then I know I can get right into it, right? Whatever the situation is. But if they tell me, oh man, I'm doing terrible, my back hurts, my car broke down, you know, I'm having problems at home, you know, then I know, okay, let's kind of, you know, ease into this conversation a little bit. You know, and it kind of decides how I'm going to approach every challenge I have.
What was a way, obviously you weren't like this or, you know, from jump, right? How did you develop it? Did you take some classes on it? Was there a favorite book that you read, or is it just you watched other leaders and mimicked what they did?
The hard way, Corey, is how, you know, my path to being a manager in that, and, you know, once I became a service manager at a small Kia store is where I really learned a lot of this. And that's when I decided to take this seriously. And the first book that I read and that I recommend to everybody read is Being the Boss by Lauryn Hill. You know, she's, you know, the book explains exactly the situation I came in, right? I was an awesome service advisor. You know, I was doing well, liking it, you know, but I was trying to start a family. So I wanted to move up. You know, so I became a service manager, and everything she speaks to into that book. For example, not everybody has the same skills that I have, right? So I can't treat everybody like they do or expect them to have them. I have to help them get to that level, you know, and that was lesson number one, because I can tell you at first, I'd be like, how come you're on roll every reason? 3 hours or a ticket. It's not that hard. All you got to do is sell, you know, and then it never clicked until I started doing, you know, my own growing and teaching that they don't know how. No one's ever taught them. You know, this kid talked too much. When he was in the shop, they moved him up to be a service advisor. But you know, and now they had to. You have to go through the training, and I really worked hard now. You know, in the last, I don't know, 10 years to really focus on the leadership aspect, doing a lot more reading, a lot more videos, being involved with, you know, with people like you, you know, in Service Rev Live and things like that, you know, where I'm learning from other people's mistakes as well as sharing my mistakes, you know, because I could also get feedback on things I could have done differently also.
I love that. And you'll appreciate this because you're in Chicago, right? Jordan, one of the greatest players of all time, right? Couldn't pick out talent. When he practiced, he would be hard on his teammates because they weren't like him, right? Yeah. And in what you were saying, reminded me of that is that, you know, it's easy for Jordan, right? Because he's worked at it. He knows what he can do, and he's taken back by it when someone else can't do the things, same thing he can do, right? So that's, I'm glad you pointed that out.
Yeah.
What systems or processes do you use to measure your team's performance?
Well, each position has their own measurements. You know, technicians, we go by efficiency. The goal is 100, right? 100, higher than 100, that's really, you know, intrinsically with the technician, right? We have more than enough work at both of our stores where if the technician wants to stay late and book more hours, they can, you know, but there are technicians that need help to get to 100%, especially the younger guys. You know, they don't understand it as well. So that's the main, you know, set mark that we have for our technicians is 100% efficiency, right? And we set that at 45 hours a week is what we're shooting for, right? They miss small, we're good. You know, we're still in 40-hour mark, okay. You know, they're lower than that, we have a one-on-one. What happened? Well, I got stuck on this. I had training for that. You know, whatever it might be, but they know we're watching. They know we're going to talk about. As far as advisors go, you know, the matrix I really like for advisors is gross profit per repair order.
Oh, okay.
You know, that one, it really tells you what the advisor does with their ROs, what they like to sell, what they like to push. You know, when the gross profit per repair order is low, you know, you would think maybe your advisor is not selling as well, but this guy loves selling tires, you know, and there's not a lot of gross profit in tires, you know, but he makes up for it in selling other work, you know, brakes, suspension work, things like that, alignments. You know, so it's something where it causes a good barometer for what the advisor is doing.
Okay. How do you foster collaboration and teamwork between advisors, technicians, parts, department, and other areas to improve the service operation?
You know, that one's a hard one because each position is different. Each position is their own specialty. But I can tell you, you know, the way we have done it is consistent communication, you know, and having the chat box in the repair order and everybody's seeing how hard everybody's trying to get that repair order done, right? When you see a parts guy telling you, I found it at three other stores, I called all three, I'm waiting for them to call back. Now you appreciate him at least trying to get that part to the technician, right? The technician, when they put in notes that say, hey, I found the customer's windshield solvent disconnected at the wiper, at the washer nozzle, I just reconnected it for him. Now the advisor appreciates that because that's a tidbit of information they can help with their customer. So then when the advisor communicates also that they've called the customer or the extended warranty company three or four times to try to get something authorized, everybody sees the effort when it's on that repair order. Everybody sees that we're all trying. When they see me jump into a repair order and say, I called the customer and sold a repair and I added the lines, right? When they see us all hands on deck, you know, it causes everybody to be on the same page and it really changes the focus on taking care of the customer, which is really what the dealer principal and the vice president of our auto group are really, you know, they're really focused on. When we get a bad survey, they want to know what happened at that survey. We could have 50 perfect surveys, but we get one that's bad, they want to find out why. They want to make sure it's not a pattern. They want to make sure it's not something that it's something that's underlying, you know, so they're involved in that. So everybody knows that. Everybody has to be ready to answer it. And, you know, we work hard to make sure we're all on the same page.
Awesome. That's great. You kind of touched upon this earlier with technology, with the rapid changes in technology, EV servicing, customer expectations. How do you keep your team, well, adaptable and ready for the future?
You know, the only way to do that is to keep the training, you know, keep training the manufacturer's training that's available, you know, for the technicians, make sure that everybody has available to take whatever classes they can take, and make sure everybody's as trained as possible. You know, you have some people that, you know, that training part of their careers is kind of over. They're an expert on things, kind of the internal combustion engine, let's say, right? Then you got guys who want to be involved with the technology, right? So it's a matter of having a good blend in the shop of both, right? Because like for General Motors, you got cars that need their engines and their valves rebuilt. And then we have EV cars and they're becoming only more popular. You know, we currently have two EV guys trained. And what I found out this morning is we were one of the few GM stores in the area that has two guys that are fully EV trained. So General Motors is sending us cars over here. So now I'm like, okay, you know, we have to be able to handle all that. So, you know, and that is on my part to forecast that. You know, we put 10 level 2 chargers in our store. So now when we have more than one EV, we don't have a line of cars, new cars that need to get charged or customer cars that need to get charged. Yeah. There's always space for them to get put on. So it's the adaptability on everybody's part.
Awesome. What's the most impactful lesson you've learned as a leader in fixed ops, and how has it shaped you the way you build and lead teams today?
Really, the main thing that I concentrate on as a leader of the stores here is, you know, how I do anything is how I do everything, right? if they see me be sloppy with something, they think it's okay to be sloppy with something. If I'm not wearing my uniform, if I'm not, you know, I make sure that I'm projecting what the company expects at all times. You know, even when I have my family's vehicle serviced, you know, I'm not doing anything crazy with the repair orders because everybody sees the repair orders from the advisors to the technicians. So everything has to be in line. So if I, you know, I had to tell you, you know, take anything from it, you know, be what you would want your store to be, you know, at all times, and make sure you're self-conscious of how, you know, your behavior reflects that.
That's great. Roger, we're right up against the time, but let's do the lightning round here. What are your three takeaways in your mind that anyone listening can take away and put into action today?
The three things to take away would be: A, make sure everybody knows what the vision is for your store, for your group, for your team, right? Two would be that everyone on your team knows how to get to that vision, knows what the process is. They have availability to the training, the special tools they need. Nothing that will hinder them on your part to get to that vision. And then three, everybody knows what the consequences are if we don't reach that goal, right? Now, consequences doesn't have to be a bad word. Consequences could be a one-on-one meeting, you know, more training, you know, rehashing how their own process, internal processes, you know, making sure that everybody knows those three things. It won't be a surprise when you try to attack any one of them.
Oh, I love that. How can people get in touch with you, Roger?
You know, you can reach me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there, or you can email me. I have an email, roger.in.service@gmail.com.
I love it. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to help unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Roger, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you. Thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question, like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
Absolutely, Corey. Thank you for having me. A lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.